Welcome. Hare Krishna. Namaste. Om Jnanatmarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Welcome, friends. Today, my talk is entitled Lord Ram, The Burden of Human Divinity. I chose to speak about Ram today for obvious reasons for most of you, because Ram Navami, or the appearance day of Sri Ram, was last Wednesday. So, Ram is one of the Dash avatars, the main avatars of Vishnu. Dash means 10. And Ram appeared on Earth some 2 million years ago in Treta Yuga, the Silver Age, according to the yugas or the epochs of the universe, the four seasons or four ages. This is the second age, the Silver Age. Some 2 million years ago, where do we find this out? We find this out in the Vedas. Specifically, Ram is spoken about in the Ramayana, which is means the, literally the life of Ram, Ramayana, as written or spoken by Valmiki, the sage, and several other Upa Ramayanas, or lesser Ramayanas. India has many of them. Anyway, they all contribute something, but the main one is the one by Valmiki, which is our main source. Ram, as an avatar, is 50% Vishnu Tattva, or God energy, and 50% Jiva Tattva, or human energy. So that's why I speak about the burden of human divinity. On the one hand, he's God, and he has most of the qualities that God possesses. But on the other hand, he's half human. So he goes through angst and self-doubt, self-recrimination. Same things as we do, and from that point of view. Only it was, most of us are missing the Vishnu Tattva, the God energy, right? Were he 100% Vishnu Tattva, then he would go on about his business without a second thought. But because he is human in large part, he appears to suffer self-doubt and self-criticism. Yeah. Although he took the path of responsible conduct, or dharma marga, it didn't come without mental anguish. So I'm not going to tell the story of the Ramayana. I'm just going to highlight several points and issues and circumstances and comparisons that come out through the course of the story. So the first thing I'd like to point out is an enlightened civilization versus the law of the jungle. Enlightened civilization establishes dharma as supreme. So dharma is right action, right conduct, good behavior, duty, occupational duty, following one's obligations, working for the benefit of self, family, and for the benefit of the whole, for the benefit of society. And then this is juxtaposed to the law of the jungle. The law of the jungle establishes the power of the strong over the weak. So we can say the law of the jungle because that's a common term, but it can also be the law of the ghetto or the law of certain neighborhoods in certain cities that you would not venture into because perhaps the gang members have taken over the streets. It's too dangerous. There's a lot of crime there, or people get killed there, or they get threatened there, various things, for example. So even though we have civilization, we still have the presence of that lawless area of civilization or areas. Dharma, the word dharma comes from the root word dhri in Sanskrit. which means to uphold or stabilize, to secure, to maintain. Without Dharma, there can be no civilization. Civilization is essentially a shelter from the world's impermanence and unpredictability. It is created when humans, unlike animals, look beyond self-preservation and self-propagation. It is created out of a sense of duty, not just for the self, but for the greater good. So Ram appeared in the city or the kingdom known as Ayodhya. In Sanskrit, the word Ayodhya means unassailable or invincible. The actual physical location of Ayodhya, yes, it's there. It's still there. It is 500 miles northeast of New Delhi. But remember, this was 2 million years ago. You can find all of these dates, all of this in the Vedas, yet, you know, mainstream history or Western, the history of Western civilizations and whatever civilizations they choose to look at ignores all of this. Thinks it's just mythology. Anyway, it is a fact that, the bridge that was built from Rameshwaram in South India on the east coast all the way to Sri Lanka from a satellite photograph, which are these photographs are available, you can still see the stones under the water today since 2 million years ago. You can see the bridge. The story and iconography of Ram can be found even today. Ram was so popular, so influential, he had such impact on the planet that Ram iconography can be found even today throughout the world. Where? India, obviously. Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Bhutan, Indonesia, China, Japan, Nepal, and Sri Lanka. Now, I'm sure I'm missing some, but that should be enough for you. You can see it, and the stories and the various characters involved in the story, those depictions are there. So, the Ramayana has two primary themes. Number one, it is the effect of enlightened monarchy or leadership in accordance with Dharma. Do we have enlightened monarchy and leadership today? Hard to find in this day and age. I would have to say that Narendra Modi would come closest to it because he is a spiritually enlightened person. Now, I'm not trying to defend or promote his politics necessarily. I'm just saying he is somebody who is more spiritually enlightened than the vast majority of world leaders that I have seen in action. So, two primary themes. Number one, enlightened monarchy. Number two, the theme of the love story between Sita and Ram, which is significant, in its dual manifestation of light and shadow. So we'll get to the shadow part too. Ram's father, King Dasharath, who was the king of Ayodhya, had three wives. Well, this is not uncommon in those days. Why did he take three wives? Well, the reason he actually took three wives because he was unable to produce an heir, and a male heir in particular, with the first wife, so he took a second wife. When that didn't work, the second wife was Kaikeyi. First wife, Kaushalya. Second wife, Kaikeyi. Third wife, Sumitra. And none of them were able to give him heirs until a special sacrifice or Agnihotra, a fire ceremony, was held, conducted by a sage, and some nectar or a potion came out of the fire sacrifice, and this was given to the queens, And they were also then impregnated by the king, Dasharatha, and all became pregnant. So, therefore, Kaushalya produced the son Ram, Kaikeyi produced the son Bharat, and Sumitra produced twins, Lakshman and Shatrughna, four boys born within 2 days of each other. Impregnated very quickly. I don't know what the calendar was on that, but they were born within a couple of days of each other, four of them. All four brothers were married in the same ceremony at 16 years of age. Ram married Sita of the kingdom Mithila, ruled by Janaka, King Janaka. I think Bharata married Sita's sister, and then the twins married the cousins. That's how it went. Now, it's interesting, too, that Ram is an expansion of Vishnu himself. Lakshman is an expansion of Sankarshan, or Adi Shesh, the serpent couch of Vishnu, the primary expansion from Vishnu, Narayan, then Sankarshan. Bharata was an expansion of Vishnu's chakra, and Shatrughna was an expansion of Vishnu's conch. Ram was the oldest, and when he was 27, it was time for him to take the throne for the coronation ceremony. The entire kingdom was just loved Ram. He was a noble, upstanding prince, the heir apparent, and everybody was very happy for him to become the next king. Then Mantra, the servant of Kaikeyi, the second queen, the mother of Bharat, stepped in and stirred the pot and turned Kaikeyi against Ram. Since she had a couple of boons that were outstanding, or blessings or favors that the king was going to give her, she asked for those at this critical point. She asked that her son Bharata be made king, number one. Number two, that Ram be exiled into the forest for 14 years. This is what happened. And people were shocked that such a thing happened, but it happened. So why did it happen? It happened to demonstrate two of God's divine opulences, of Ram's divine opulences. Number one, Vairagya, and number two, Virya. We learn from the Vedas that God has six divine opulences or qualities. And two of them are Vairagya and Virya. Vairagya is detachment. Put yourself in Ram's shoes. You're about to become the king of Ayodhya. You will be crowned tomorrow. And then you get the news from your father, the king, that you're not going to be crowned king. Your younger brother, Bharat, is going to be crowned king, who was actually not in Ayodhya at the time. He was visiting his grandfather, Bharat. And on top of that, you're going to be sent into the jungle, the forest, into exile for 14 years. Now, if this were you, how would you react? You would be shocked. At the very least, you would be sad, sorrowful, depressed, what to speak of angry or incensed, for most of us, and we'd speak out. Ram didn't question it. He followed the order of his father, because his father's order was his mandate, and off he went to the forest. The second thing is Virya. All incarnations of the Godhead are there for a purpose. There's a reason they're there. And we find that in Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Krishna. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam. That's it. To protect the sadhus, the saintly people, the theists, the people of faith, the godly people, the God-conscious people, Those are the sadhus. And number two, vinashayach dushkritam, to annihilate or wipe out the demons, the villains, the ogres, the people who are self-motivated, self-interested, who wish ill to everybody else or to a large portion of the population. So that's the purpose of an incarnation of God, according to Krishna. Now, let's look at the theme of the love story. Here we have Sita and Ram. We know that incarnations of Vishnu, first of all, my friends, I've said this how many times you've heard me. There's no such thing as God without the goddess. And when they state their names, it's always the goddess's name first. There's the divine masculine, which is God, and the divine feminine, which is the goddess. So, Sita, Ram. Okay? So, Sita is none other than the goddess of fortune herself. Lakshmi is known as the, well, that's one of her essential names or original name, and she's a manifestation of Lakshmi. She's the goddess of fortune. Just like Lakshmi Narayan, she's goddess of fortune, or Radha Krishna. Radha is another manifestation of the goddess of fortune. Okay? So, Sita and Ram, divine energy or the presence of God exists in love that is not opposed to Dharma. Love or relationship that is opposed to Dharma would never have within it or manifest divine energy. What to speak of higher consciousness? Okay? So, it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 11, Dharma virudo bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. Krishna says, I am sex life which is not contrary to religious principles, which is not contrary to virtue or virtuous behavior. So, a deep abiding love must go beyond the physical, as well as the current individuality in this life, and connect with the soul of the beloved. This is what we're talking about when we're speaking about a love that is not opposed to Dharma. So how can we look at this in terms of our own relationships, we as humans? Those three categories. I've told you this before. Number one, we're attracted to a member of the opposite sex because of on the physical level, gender attraction. Males are attracted to females, females to males. I know it's a little bit different nowadays, but that's the fundamental way that nature has prescribed it. So the physical level. Physical attraction, that happens all the time. People see somebody and they go, whoa, she's really attractive. We know that. Okay. The second level is individuality. This soul is in this lifetime, has incarnated into this particular body, this being, this person in this lifetime. Well, who is that person? What does she want in life? What is she trying to learn? What is she trying to do? What is she trying to achieve? What are her goals, her objectives? What is meaningful for her? This is she as an individual, or he. As an individual, this has nothing whatsoever to do with gender. These are two persons. One happens to be male, one happens to be female. We have to see her on this level, or him. The third level is the spiritual level. This is a soul traveling through yet another lifetime. Yeah. So, this soul is on the journey. We have to also see the soul and engage with the soul. You know how people talk about, especially here in the Western world, oh, this one's my soulmate. Are there soulmates? Sure, there are. Are they very common? No, my friends. I have listened to people tell me all about this, my clients, for some 44 years. And there aren't a lot of them out there, I assure you. I've done like 50,000 birth charts, birth chart consultations in the last 44 years. So there aren't a lot of them out there. So the soul's on a journey. We need to be able to connect with that soul. And really, we have to have a meaning relationship with this person as an individual, second level, and as a soul on the highest level. Then you will have a spiritual relationship. You have to care about this person's goals in life and their spiritual development. Okay? That's expressed in the eternal love of God and Goddess, Lakshmi and Vishnu, Radha and Krishna, Sita and Ram. One of Sita's names is Ayonija. Why is she called Ayonija? When Janaka was plowing the field, he was going to do a huge sacrifice. And when you do a huge sacrifice conducted by Brahmins, by priests, with a lot of paraphernalia, I mean, these things can go on for days, weeks, or months. These sacrifices, and a lot is spent on the paraphernalia, and a lot is given in charity. Okay? So he was plowing the field with a golden plow by hand. I guess he had a bullock in front of him. And the plow turned over a furrow, and there was a baby girl in the furrow, in the earth. This was Sita. A Yoni-ja. Yoni is womb. Ja is birth. So Yoni-ja, birth from the womb. Ah, Yoni-ja. It was not born through the womb. Born through Mother Earth. Who's her mother? Bhumi Devi. Mother Earth. And Janak became her adoptive father, for lack of a better term. So she was not an average baby, let's put it that way. It's interesting, too, we could even point to Chaitanya Lila. When Lord Chaitanya married his first wife, Lakshmi Devi, he then journeyed shortly thereafter to East Bengal to spread the Sankirtan movement. And Lakshmi Devi, who was very, very young, was feeling unbearable separation from her young husband, Chaitanya, and was physically bitten by the serpent of separation. She was bitten by a cobra. But it was the serpent of separation. She could not live without her husband. Lakshmi could not live without Vishnu. And she was bitten by the serpent of separation, and she passed away. So, you know, Lakshmi Narayan, God and Goddess, they don't like to be separated. So let's go on further with that. There's a statement that the wife is the shadow of the husband. Now, I know I'm going to get some blowback with that statement, especially nowadays in Kali Yuga, in the Iron Age. So please give me a moment here, ladies. I am not anti-feminist, and I'm not against women expressing their individuality. In fact, I'm quite the opposite in terms of always helping. I spend my life trying to empower women. It is the truth. But we have light, we have shadow. We have positive pole or positive charge. We have negative charge. It's not like the wife is negative. It's not a negative thing. It's opposite charges. Yeah. So Sita tells Ram, because they're on the verge of going into the forest in exile, and Lakshman, who is very close to Ram, he's going to come one way or another. He's coming. He's determined. And he's determined to protect his brother. That's going to be his job. But Sita insists on coming too. Well, a woman who is raised in a palace with servants and maid servants and girlfriends and everybody looking after her, and now she's going to go off into the jungle and live for 14 years And Ram tried his best to dissuade her. Would she listen to him? Nope. She wouldn't. So she insisted on going. And so it was the three of them. It was Ram, Sita, and Lakshman who went off into exile. So we can look at this from our point of view too as unconditional versus conditional love. Nowadays, believe me, friends, I speak to hundreds of people. I mean, I speak to people every working day around the world. I have clients in 54 countries. And what I hear, especially nowadays, especially from women, because most of my clients are women, I have lots of men, but, you know, it's just like a doctor's office. 75% are women, 25% are men. Same. And they're trying to find a man, find a husband, go into a relationship, settle down, get married, have babies, normal stuff. The men nowadays won't commit. They won't commit. It's been very, it's like an issue now, especially men who are like in their 40s. And some of them have been married, some of them haven't, and it's so hard for these girls to find men that will commit. The love between Ram and Sita is unconditional love. You want to be in a spiritual, loving, transcendental relationship with your mate, with your partner. Your love must rise to the unconditional. It can't be a fair weather marriage, my friends. Yeah, well, as long as things are good, I'll be here. As soon as things get tough, I'm out of here. No. That's not going to result in a spiritual or divine marriage. So it's conditional versus unconditional. Sita and Ram, their love was unconditional. They were absolutely dedicated to each other. If you want to rise to the place of transcendent love or unconditional love, then you must commit and you must stay committed in your relationship. If she's worth marrying, if she's worth sharing your spiritual life together and walking your path, walking your journey together, then she's worth committing to. Okay? Sita wanted to take off all of her jewelry. She had all her princessly jewelry and beautiful stuff, of course, before she entered the forest, and she was told no, she must not remove her jewelry. And she had 16 items that she wore that designated her as a married woman. I'm not going to mention all these because I don't know what they all were, but that's what it says. And the reason she was told that she couldn't take off her jewelry was because she must remain pure, like Goddess Parvati. She must remain the goddess, the spiritual wife. Otherwise, if she took off all her jewelry and became affected so much by the jungle, then she may turn into Kali. Yeah, you know Kali. Some of you might be married to Kali. If so, I'm sorry to hear that. But, yeah, you want the wife to be loving, supportive. You want her to see you, to recognize you, and vice versa. You know, a man wants the same from the woman. Greetings from Mumbai. Hiran, how are you? Okay, greetings from Mumbai. The wife has to retain her self-respect. This is very important, my friends, for us humans. You, as a married man, must make sure your wife possesses self-respect. You must instill in her self-respect. You must enforce or encourage her self-respect. In order to do that, she must look good. She must be well-groomed. She must wear nice clothing. This is one of the things we learned from Lakshmi, from the goddess of fortune. Wearing nice clothing, looking good. It doesn't have to be the most expensive stuff. But she has to look good so she has self-respect. And she feels good to go out and wherever you go together. And not that she feels like she's wearing rags. Not good. It's not. It's not good for her self-confidence or her self-respect, right? Very important. Then, Ravan. Ravan comes into the picture. Ravan, is a very powerful demon. Well, he's not exactly a demon. His mother was a Rakshasi, a demoness. But his father was a very, very high sage, high-born sage, a Brahmin. So Ravan is, by birth, in that sense, a Brahmin, but who copulated with a Rakshasi, a demoness. So guess what we have here? We have both natures in Ravan. On the one hand, he's very lusty, lustful. He wants to enjoy every woman he sees. He wants to be with married women and welcomes them into his harem, his harem. He's very good at, he has sexual prowess, but plus he's very powerful. He stole Lanka from his brother Kuvera. He stole his brother's kingdom. And Ravan heard from his sister that Sharpanakha, that the most beautiful woman in the world was traveling through the forest with two men who looked like princes but were dressed in bark. And she was married. Sita is married to one of the men named Ram, and then his brother Lakshman was also with them. She says to him, "You must have Sita. You're the most powerful man on the planet. Why do you not have the most beautiful woman? Because you do not have her. This guy in the forest, dressed in bark, he has her. You should go get her." That's what happens with Ravan. Now, we're told both in the Bible and in the Vedas that there is an original sin. There is original sin. And what is original sin? The original sin is enviousness of God, envy toward God, being envious of God. That's the original sin. We also know that we are not supposed to yearn for or covet the wives of others. Correct? Dharma means not to covet the wives of others. But Ravan coveted everybody's wife if she was attractive. And when he coveted Sita, who is Lakshmi herself, who's the goddess herself, this is the worst thing that you can do, is want something that belongs not to you but to God himself, in this case Ram. So it states that love that is opposed to Dharma is nothing but lust or selfish desire. And what was the result? Ultimately, by the time we get to the end of the story, the result for Ravan was the total loss of his kingdom, which he lost. His sons, who were killed in the battle, all of his sons were killed. And ultimately, his own life. This is what lust got him. This is where it got him. He lost everything. He was advised by several people, including Vibhishana, his brother, and others, don't do this. Forget about her. Leave her alone. But no, he didn't listen. So what did he do? He kidnapped Sita. He kidnapped her. And he took her to Lanka, and Sita would not go along with it. She would not give in to him. She was true, loyal to Ram. She followed the path of Dharma. She said she would fast. She would not be in his palace, so he put her in a garden under guard by several Rakshasis, demonesses, and they were keeping an eye on her, and she was sitting under an Ashoka tree, and that's where she sat. This was the final year of their exile. They had already been in the forest for 13 years. This was the 14th year when she was kidnapped at the beginning of that year by Ravan. And he would come to her every day and he would offer her gifts and he would romance her with words and try to entice her and tell her how beautiful she was, etc., etc. And she would not give in. And she just knew that her love, her Ram, her husband would come for her at some point in time. So now let's look at three aspects of the feminine in the Ramayana. When Ram was 16, he and Lakshman were taken by the sage Vishvamitra. They were taken away from the king, the kingdom, to help them to grow as men. They're taken away from all the protection and, you know, mollycoddling that goes on when you're at home, and to make men out of them. And Vishvamitra, the sage, came and took them. Dasharat, the father, no, you can't take Ram. Whatever, you know, that's my Ram. You can't take Ram. Vasishta, the family priest in Ayodhya, said, Dasharat, don't make this mistake. Let the boys go with Vishvamitra. He will teach them things and he will give them weapons and he will train them in ways that we cannot do. Never mind your attachment that, I can't have any separation from Ram. I won't survive. Calm down. Dasharat. Anyway, he gave his permission and off they went. There were many demons, rakshasas, ogres in various forests because the sages, the sadhus, the saintly persons would live in the forest and they'd set up their ashrams there and they would have their disciples or their followers and they live a saintly life there away from the city. But the ogres and the demons were also in the forest and they would try to destroy the sacrifices and the religious and spiritual rituals that the sages were undergoing or planning. So they needed protection. And Vishvamitra brought Ram and Lakshman to teach them how to protect. They already had Dhanurveda. They were already accomplished archers and warriors. They'd already been trained in that. But Vishvamitra was giving him hands-on. Let's put it that way. The real thing, not just the shooting at targets. Takes him to a forest where Taraka, a demoness, a Rakshasi, is present. And she is wild and violent. No rules. She's like a mad woman running through the forest. A Rakshasi, or creature that harms the innocent. This is what Vishvamitra told Ram. He said, you need to kill her. And what do you think Ram said? I can't kill her. She's a woman. I don't kill women. I don't hit women. I don't cause injury to women. Of course not. In civilization, we don't do that. We all know that, right? But Vishvamitra said, this creature is someone who harms the innocent and must be killed for the greater good. Be they man or woman, anybody who harms innocent people needs to be killed for the greater good. Vishvamitra explains that and he convinces Ram, in this case, it's not a woman, it's somebody who's a menace and who's doing nothing but making trouble. So Ram comes to see there are certain circumstances in which certain things are acceptable. And he kills her. Kills her with an arrow. One arrow. Now, this is interesting if we look at from a karmic point of view. Let me bring this in. We live in a highly, highly left-wing liberal society. More and more every day. Now we have the woke thing going on. It's like ultra-left. I mean, it used to be left to center. Now it's ultra-left. So much so that, and as you know, the death penalty is anathema. Oh, no, you can't kill people. That, we're just the same as they are. If we kill them, we're no better than they are as a society. Somebody who is a murderer is truly a murderer, has been convicted of murder. When you follow the Christian dogma, it means you only have one life. And once you're dead, you're dead. And you either go to hell forever or you go to eternity or you go to heaven forever. That's it. Now, what we understand from the Vedic point of view is reincarnation. This is one lifetime out of thousands, my friends. You're not going to do it all in one lifetime, believe me. So the best thing to do when somebody kills somebody, that soul should be put to death. Because his karmic slate is then immediately cleared. And that soul can go on to the next lifetime without carrying the sin of murder. Yeah. That's how it works. So, but nowadays, no, the death penalty, we can't have death penalty. No, let's keep them alive for the next 30, 40 years. And how much does that cost the state yearly to keep this guy alive? That's the other side of it. I know you won't all agree with that. That's fine. So because Ram listened to Vishvamitra, he was given mantras that transformed arrows into missiles. Yeah, that's what they were able to do back in those days. That's the first aspect of the feminine. The second aspect of the feminine was the sage's wife, Ahalya. The sage Gautama had a wife named Ahalya. Gautama, being, you know, a sage, not always enthused about his wife, meaning he's wrapped up in his sadhana, his spiritual performance, his study of Shastra, of the Vedas, etc. So she may have been somewhat neglected. And Indra, chief of the gods, Indra approached her, who's known to be rather lusty, approached her and was attracted to her. And when Gautama came back to the ashram and found Indra with her, he turned her to stone. He had this kind of power where he turned her to stone because she had been unfaithful. That's what happened. So what does Ram do? Vishvamitra explains this to Ram, and he says, now your task is to liberate her. So she was turned to stone. She was a stone pillar. Ram touched with his foot, and immediately the stone broke away, and Ahalya emerged from the stone. He liberated her. She returned to her human form. So what he did was he showed compassion. You know, we humans, we make mistakes, my friends. We do. We're not perfect. We do things we don't want to do, but we are compelled by lower nature, lower modes, and we do them, and then we feel badly. As long as we know what we've done and we're sincere, we're sorry for it, and we're trying to progress on the spiritual path, we have to be also compassionate. toward other humans, toward other people. Hmm? So Ram liberated Ahalya. The third example of the three aspects of the feminine was now Ram had to go and find Sita and rescue her from the demon Ravan. Sita is chaste, faithful, and domestic partner, and Sita follows all the rules. Ahalya broke a rule, and Taraka, the first one, the demoness, was wild and violent with no rules. So who is the most important of them all? It would be Sita. The husband's duty, this is for all of us, is to guide and protect the wife. Protection. I talk to women all the time, as mentioned. All women in relationship, all women, this is what they want in relationship. They want to be loved, respected, regarded, protected, and made to feel like a woman. When you can provide that for your wife, for your partner, then she will easily and happily slip into the female role in the relationship. There are two roles in a relationship, a male role, a female role. Am I making this up? No, it's nature. It's yin-yang. It's Purusha Prakriti. When you provide that for your wife, she will happily be in the female role. My friends, I know very powerful, wealthy, famous, highly successful women. Lots of them. Some of them are household names that are my clients. Every single one of them wants to be in the female role in relationship. She doesn't want the male role. When the man is not strong enough for the woman, this is a good relationship like this. The man's in the male role, the woman's in the female role. And when he's not strong enough, this is what happens, my friends. We get role reversal. Do they discuss this over tea? No. It just happens. That creates frustration for both of them, and over time, resentment. Okay. Ram's lamentation. I'm going to read just a little bit from the Ramayana, because now this will show us Ram's humanity or human-like behavior. Where Krishna, for example, who's 100% the Godhead, would not behave like this. This is how we behave. So after Ram killed Maricha in the form of the golden deer, when Maricha called out, help, 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 in Ram's voice to get Lakshman to come and save him, which Lakshman didn't want to do, so that Ravan could then kidnap Sita in their little ashram, which is indeed what happened. Ram killed the golden deer, and he changed. He was a shapeshifter, and he was Ravan's compatriot, his servant. He changed from the golden deer then into the demon that he was, and he died. So this is from the Ramayana. Ram's apprehension increased upon hearing the frightful cry of a jackal at his back. These are omens now that are talking about. Then birds and other wild animals begin to pass Ram on his right side, uttering frightful cries. Moreover, his left eye twitched, his left arm throbbed convulsively, and his heart thumped. While observing these inauspicious signs, Ram met Lakshman coming from the cottage. He was told to stay. He was told to, under no circumstances should you abandon Sita. But Sita egged him on and even went so far as to say, you want me? Is that why you won't go and help Ram? He said, Ram is not in trouble. Ram would never be in trouble. This is a false alarm. So Sita intimidated him and tried to embarrass him until he would go. And he went, which he shouldn't have. While observing these inauspicious signs, Ram met Lakshman coming from the cottage. Taking him by the left hand, Ram immediately began to reproach him, saying, "How could you disobey my order?" Leaving Sita unprotected from all the inauspicious omens that have appeared, I can understand that she has either been killed or kidnapped. O Lakshman, how could you have abandoned her? As the two rushed back to the cottage, Ram suddenly tripped on the forest path. Overwhelmed by the fear of losing Sita and angry with Lakshman for leaving her unprotected, Ram began to lament like a deranged person. "If Sita is dead, then I shall kill myself, for I cannot bear to think of living without her. O Lakshman, how could you betray me like this and leave dear Sita unprotected?" So that's how humans talk. That's how humans behave. That's what humans go through emotionally in times like this, correct? It's not usually how a god would act. Continuing. "However, when Sita could not be found," when they got back to the ashram, Sita was gone. "When Sita could not be found, Ram became discouraged and sat down in despair. Regardless, Lakshman encouraged him to continue searching. Thus, they roamed across many mountains, forests, and plains. Finally, Ram could go no further, and he gave way to intense grief. Standing motionless, seeming bereft of reason, he breathed hotly, like that, and his eyes filled with tears. Ram became indifferent to Lakshman's assurances that they would find Sita." Yeah, he became hopeless, without hope. "Tormented by love, Ram cried out helplessly, 'Sita! Sita!' again and again. As if deranged, Ram cried, 'My darling, have you hidden yourself just to play a joke with me? Where are you? I beg you to please come out, for my suffering is intolerable.'" So there's the burden of human divinity. An example, clear example. Then, near the end, finally, they found the monkey army. They found Hanumanji, Jai Hanuman, Sugriva, Vali, the brothers who had a falling out. We won't get into all that. They built the bridge to Lanka across the ocean. Hanuman wrote on each rock, Rama, two syllables. Rama, the name of Ram. The monkeys would walk out, they throw one rock into the ocean, you could step on it, it would not sink, because of Ram's name written on the rock. Then they go and throw the next rock like this, they kept going one after another, until they build the bridge all the way across to Lanka. It's lovely when you go down to Rameshwaram. I highly recommend that you go there. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. So Ram killed the demon Ravan at last, established Ravan's brother Vibhishana, who is a devotee of God, on the throne of Sri Lanka. Ram's intention was never, now this is very important, mostly when conquerors conquer, or when warriors defeat an enemy in battle, what do? They occupy his territory. They take over his kingdom or his wealth, his people, everything, right? Ram's intention was never to conquer and occupy Sri Lanka. And did he do it? No. His intention was only to rescue his wife, number one, Sita, and to Paritranaya Sadunam, and to protect the sadhus and Vinashaya Chidushkritam, and to remove the demons the dark forces, the dark powers that be, who are working toward our detriment. Mm-hmm. Are there any of those on the planet right now? Oh my goodness, are there ever? I won't even get into it this time. So let's juxtapose or compare Ram and Ravan. Ram followed Dharma. Ravan followed Adharma. Ram went with intellect to make his choices. Discrimination, discretion. Ravan went on base instinct to make his choices. Ram acted in harmony with his soul, his true identity, his Atman. Ravan acted based on, all of his actions were based on ego. Ahankara. I am the doer. It's all about me. Hey, let me tell you about me. It's all about me. I'm the most important guy in the world, ever. That's Ravan. Okay. Ram was motivated by love. Ravan was motivated by power and lust. Ram operated out of detachment. Well, look, he walked away from the kingdom in less than 24 hours. Pretty impressive. And Ravan was motivated by attachment. He was attached to anything and everything he could enjoy to the detriment of others. Now, I should mention, all the women that he had in his harem, including the wives of others, and women would come to him. He didn't force any of them. He wasn't a rapist. He didn't force them. This was his Brahmin side. But Sita, you know, he didn't rape Sita. He just tried to coerce her. It didn't work. But he didn't force any of them. Ram was the best among men. Ravan was the worst among demons. Ram was a Kshatriya, a warrior, a prince. Ravan was a Brahmin, Rakshasa. You want, is there any such thing as a Brahmin Rakshasa? Yeah, there it is. It's Ravan. He's the guy. Okay, and, you know, interestingly, when Ravan lay on the battlefield, mortally wounded, Ram said he had no hard feelings. Can you imagine? He had no hard feelings. He had rescued Sita. Her virtue was intact. She hadn't been with Ravan. And he said to Lakshman, his brother, he says, Ravan is a Brahmin, son of a powerful sage. Now go take instruction from him. Lakshman said, well, what? What are you talking about? Go take instruction from him. Ask him to teach you. So Lakshman walked over to Ravan and he stood right next to his head and he glowered down at him. Instruct me. Ravan turned his head away. He wouldn't look at him. Lakshman walked away. Ram then walked to Ravan and stood at his feet and said, I hold no grudge against you. I know you are a Brahmin. Please instruct me. Wow. Would you do that? Well, he was a Brahmin. So Ravan turned to him and says, I know I'm about to die, but I will share with you one thing. This is the most important lesson that I learned in my life. And he said, the nature of the unevolved mind is to be attracted to people and circumstances that will cause harm or self-undoing, and to avoid things that will bring the greatest benefit. What tempts us will, in all probability, be the cause of our downfall. What we shy away from, on the other hand, what we procrastinate about, is likely to be the very thing that will bring about our evolution and our crowning achievement. Wow. Now that is powerful truth, my friends. Powerful. Did he behave in that manner? No, he didn't. But he still spoke the truth. Robin, we say, two heads are better than one. Don't we say this? This is a comment we make. Well, Robin had 10 heads. 10 pairs of eyes and 10 sets of arms. So, in that sense, he would truly be a superior man. And that's why he was so powerful. And what good did all those heads do? Look at his choices. He didn't make such great choices with all those heads, did he? He submits to his basest instincts and passions. Okay, justice. In Ayodhya, now Ram returns to Ayodhya. He's made king. Bharat never took the throne, by the way. Bharat, his brother, never sat on the throne. He knew it was Ram's throne. He wanted no part of his mother's power grab. And he just minded the throne. He looked after things while Ram was away. So Ram then ascended the throne when he returned to Ayodhya with Sita and Lakshman. In Ayodhya, during Ram Raja, which is the kingdom of Ram, or his sovereign state, everyone was happy and fulfilled. Complaints that were presented in court were heard, adjudicated, and resolved immediately, since there were so few. Nowadays, it takes years to hear, adjudicate, and resolve legal complaints, since there are so many. True. I mean, years. There are court cases that go on for years, as we all know. Apparently, in India, what I've heard or what I've read is there are years that the court system, justice system is backed up for years. You may not even get in there, and you won't even be alive when they call your name to have your case heard. Why is this, though, in this day and age? Because it's not Treta Yuga. It's not the Silver Age. It's Kali Yuga. It's the Iron Age. And Dharma has steadily diminished in this age. And there are people, so many liars, thieves, murderers, swindlers, rapists, pedophiles or pedophiles, depending how you want to say it. There's everywhere. It's rampant. But the king would decide the case. Boom, you bring it in. Here, let's hear this. Let's hear both sides. Okay, this is it. Boom. And it's finished. That's how they do it. Everything that happens in a kingdom is the responsibility of the king. Once a man accused Ram of being a bad king, since the man's son had died an untimely death earlier than his father, which was unnatural. And it's the king's responsibility. So the ruler is ultimately at fault. So a pregnant Sita, who was pregnant at that time, is banished and removed to the forest to live in the ashram of Valmiki. Why? When Sita was rescued from Lanka, she had to walk through fire to prove her chastity. And she said she would walk through fire, which she did. And the fire god himself, Agni, carried her out of the fire and attested to her chastity and placed her before Ram, which was good enough. Why would he do something like that? Because he knew as soon as you hear that a woman stayed at the house of another man, it is automatically assumed, well, what was she doing there all night? I wonder. So it is the nature of society to judge her guilty if she stayed in the house of another. Now, you may say nowadays it's not like that, but in the days when Dharma was at that level, it was looked upon as such. So even some of the citizens of Ayodhya, since Ram had returned and taken the throne, still didn't believe that Sita was pure and chaste, believed she was contaminated, having spent a year with Ravan in his kingdom. So you could say this was a bad move, and it was, in a sense, to remove Sita to the forest. And I don't know that Ram knew she was pregnant at that time, where she gave birth to the two sons, Lava and Kush, sometime later. But that's what happened. They said, well, Ram, take another wife. I mean, his father had three wives. No, I will not take another wife. And he had an image of Sita made out of gold and sat her on the throne next to his. And that was his wife in effigy. Then when they had the Ashwamedha sacrifice, when you go around and you, not only are you king, you become the emperor of many kingdoms, and they send the horse around, and the horse is the challenge to the local king. You either accept that Ram is the emperor, and if you don't, then the armies will fight. The king's army and Ram's army will come, and they will have battle. So when, and the horse is the symbol. Take the horse and you give it back to Ram, and you recognize his authority, his supremacy. So when the horse wandered into the forest, where his two sons, who were teenagers at this point in time, but trained, well trained in warfare, they took the horse and wouldn't give it back. So Ram's army was defeated by them. And then Ram came, and Ram didn't actually fight with them once Sita told them that these are your sons. But, why did this happen like this? Because Dharma had left Ram, because he abandoned Sita in the ashram of Valmiki. It is stated that Dharma left Ram and had gone to his sons, Lava and Kush. The juxtaposition of Ram and Krishna. Krishna was 100% Vishnu Tattva, God energy. It never bothered him to be attacked by so many demons. It never bothered Krishna to be separated from his birth parents, Devaki and Vasudev, or his foster parents, Yashoda and Nanda, or even Radha, his true love from his youth. Either as a coward boy in youth or when he took up his dharma as a prince, none of this bothered Krishna. He's completely detached. Krishna broke rules. Ram followed all the rules, very obedient. Ram became emotionally conflicted due to his various challenges because he had the burden of human divinity. Whereas Krishna broke many rules and was unaffected by having broken those rules or by his many challenges because God was transcendental to it all. So, what does it mean for us, the burden of human divinity? Because we are human and we are trying to approach divinity. If we are on a spiritual path, we are trying to approach divinity. That's what we're doing. We're trying to spiritualize ourselves, raise our God consciousness, and become the divine beings we are by nature and are meant to be. We already are that, but we have to retrieve it because we lost it. We let it go. To transmute the human nature into the divine nature means the removal of suffering by the non-identification with the material world and physical realities. As long as we think we are this body, this is my world, this is the reality, as long as we keep identifying with these things and attaching ourselves to people, things, and places and circumstances, we will keep coming back lifetime after lifetime. So let us all rise up to the point of transcendence. Let us take the opportunity of this human birth and become the spiritual beings we are meant to be and what we have always been by nature. Conclusion. Ram is famous for three things in particular. Number one, defeating the demon Ravan. Number two, rescuing Sita. And number three, being a just ruler. So what was the key or is the key to Ram's success and popularity worldwide? Even today, Ram is extremely popular in all of these countries that I mentioned at the beginning. He is still popular, even though a lot of them may not know the stories. His iconography is there in India. Here in the West, we have now accepted and taken up the worship and the appreciation of Sri Ram, and have for years now. Why is he so popular and successful? Because everyone loved him. Everyone loved him. When? Throughout his entire lifetime. Everybody loved him. Yeah, a couple of people here and there. And of course, the demons, they didn't like him so much. Everybody loved him. You want to be popular? You want to be successful? That's the key. Follow your dharma. Do good service. Look after people. Do right by them. And most importantly, make them want to love you. Open their hearts. Love them. How do you make them love you? By loving them. Simple. Love attracts love. All right. Thank you for your kind attention. Jai Shri Ram. Jai Sitaram. Hare Krishna.